Hello, everyone.
Hello. Give me a second, everyone. Just doing some administrative stuff. Talk amongst yourselves for a bit.
Wonderful.
Why don't you discuss the latest Hollywood scandal?
The Last of Us. It premiered. That's not the latest Hollywood scandal we're talking about.
Did
you watch The Last of Us?
No. I was thinking of Roiland getting cancelled, personally.
Yeah, that's not great.
It's certainly on my radar, because, you know, it happened like the day after my High on Life video went out.
Better than the day before.
I suppose. But now I'm probably going to have to put some kind of disclaimer on this week's YouTube release, saying, yes, we know. Don't comment on it 500 times, because that will not make us any more aware of this fact. Anyway. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slightly Something Else. I'm Yats Crucial. I'm joined by Marty Sleaver.
Hello, everyone.
And this week, we're talking about RPG parties for no particular reason.
Nope.
Marty just threw it out as an idea, and I found myself instantly intrigued. Is there a perfect formula for the members of an RPG party?
Yeah, it's funny, because it's one of those things where it feels like there's a lot of ground rules that have been set in other genres throughout the decades, but it doesn't feel like there's ground rules for RPG parties, so I'm curious if...
Well, I can think of one. Someone's got to do the healing.
Someone does have to do the healing. This is true. Someone has to do the healing.
One person. What's your perfect number of active party members in an RPG?
So, that's tough. Yeah. I think four is the perfect number. I think three, even though I love certain games with three, like Final Fantasy VII and Chrono Trigger.
Yeah,
four.
Chrono Trigger, Mass Effect.
Yeah,
Fantasy VII, as you said. I'm trying to remember what the other ones were. Did Final Fantasy IX have three or four?
No, I believe IX had four.
I think you're right about that.
But it's nice to be able to, instead of just doing the traditional triangle of damage dealer, damage taker, and healer. It's nice to be able to sort of have characters that are like, oh, this is our rogue and he's going to steal shit, or this is our offensive mage or defensive mage.
Because if you got three, that's fairly obvious. Healer, damage, tank.
Yeah.
Healer, DPS, tank, as the tanks everyone somebody says.
Yeah.
But if you got a fourth one, then you've got the wild card.
You do, which is always great.
And that's where sort of personal choice can come in. Like, I always thought, I was counting in my head how long it would take before we got to this, but I always thought, when I was playing Persona, I liked one character to specialize in status ailments, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I played through Persona 4, and it didn't take me too long to realize that status ailments are kind of broke in that game.
Absolutely, and it's something that a lot of, like, they don't have this sort of the glitzy shine of like a mega offensive attack or a cool spell, but you can absolutely, like all those modern Persona games, you can absolutely break them if you
at some point Yosuke gets the spell that confuses everyone, and if you can confuse just one like enemy, that's basically take a seat, you're done. You can just watch them kill each other for the rest of the fight.
You just threw a hand grenade in their party. Do you think there's an amount where you can have too many party members? I'm thinking of games like Suikoden, the Suikoden series. You got six party members rolling on.
I really hate when there's more party members than you can have at any one time. That moment when you have to pick one to go onto the sidelines is always a painful moment for me.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Because I'm like, shit, instantly I now have this instinctive knowledge that I'm not playing optimally anymore.
Yeah, it's funny because I like games where you start out with just yourself. Like you said, Earthbound starts that way. You're just Ness. Yeah. And then they slowly fold in. It's not like you have a full party right off the bat. They slowly fold in party members. Persona does the same thing. But yeah, you do hit that point where you're like, shit, I got five of them. I only got four slots. So what do I do now?
The question is, do they still level up if they're not in your party? Because if they do, I'm not so bothered. That's why I very hurriedly maxed out Mishima's friendship track in Persona 5. Because that means all your party members get the same XP regardless of if they're equipped or not.
He sucks, right? Like, he sucks as a dude. Like,
well, they all suck as people. That's why you've got to fix them. That's what's the whole point of the relationship tracks in those games.
I mean, that is... Okay, well, you put it that way. That is, I mean,
you've got to fix them so that they become worthy of your snogs.
But I feel like that is one of the ground rules all games should have is it should be shared XP. Even if they're on the bench, they should still be learning. I don't want to suddenly get two dungeons in and then this one dude is so far behind that I'm like, well, I'm never going to use Morgana.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you don't keep them leveled up, then you're just going to have to grind them up later or never use them again.
Yeah.
And I find that annoying. I've came up with a term that hasn't really stuck many, many years ago that I referred to as the fuck around deferment index, which was the amount of time a game takes to let you get nice and settled in before it starts fucking you around.
Sure.
Something live service games do a lot. I think it was in my Destiny 2 review I was talking about it, because that game has a surprisingly long fuck about deferment index. Mm-hmm. Where you can get through quite a lot of mandatory plot before they start going, oh, better do a few side missions to be properly leveled up for the next bit.
Yep.
And then you have to grind up more and more just to make the same amount of progress you were making in the plot as quickly as you were earlier. And I would call
is that the point where games kind of lose you a little bit?
I think the point where a game starts tacitly expecting you to grind is where the fuck about deferment index kicks in.
Yeah. Which is funny, because there's a whole subset of people, I'm sure, who, like, that's part of the deal with them, is they like JRPGs and RPGs in general because of that sort of, all right, I can turn my brain off for this hour or two, listen to podcasts, if you will. And, yeah.
I get that, because I did that a lot in Persona 4 and 5, just grinding through dungeons, making sure I ground up all the different personas and crafted them all.
Yeah. Did going all the through side Mentos, quests, or going through old palaces and
listen to the podcast. It's comforting to know that you're fully leveled. Comforting to know that you'll probably be able to get through things. But I hate it when it's a game I'm expected to play through in a week.
That's not great. It's also in the same way of shared XP with a party. If you're going to introduce me, if you're going to introduce a new character that I can use, there has to be some sort of parity level wise. Like they have to, they can't be like 10 levels behind the current party. Like at that point, like, you're like, I've invested too much. It's not worth me going back to this. Like, you have to, if you're gonna introduce a new character, there has to be a reason why I should care about that character, either through story or, you know, through gameplay mechanics.
Well, you say that, but I always thought Earthbound did this pretty well in that every time you get a new party member, they start at level one. But because they're at level one, every fight they get into for like the next two dungeons, they just immediately level up like several times over.
Yeah, and it does feel really good. Like when you first get Paula into the party and go into a cave, like you'll just like wreck shit and she'll level up several levels each battle.
It's weirdly satisfying in a way where they just show up out of the box with the same level as you isn't quite as satisfying.
Earthbound also does an interesting thing where for you know, that's a game with only four you know, permanent party members. You have sort of goof party members. But when it introduces the later two, Jeff and Pooh, you get an extended sequence where you just play as them. So with Jeff, you're like running around his boarding school and you're doing the Loch Ness Monster thing. And with Pooh, you're sort of running around his Tibet or wherever the fuck he's supposed to be from.
I like that we can all say Pooh with a straight face, incidentally.
I don't know what else to call him. There's not even like a non-canonical name we can call him. He's just named Pooh. And I like that because, again, like it puts you in their shoes. And then when they finally reunite with your party, you already have this built-in thing with them as opposed to just, all right, just fucking add another one to the back of the cart, which, you know, happens a lot. Like Chrono Cross is an example of a game, whereas Chrono Trigger only had 7 party members or so throughout the game. Chrono Cross had something like 45, and some of them were just like mushroom dude.
At that point, it feels like more like showing off than trying to make, you know, a decent RPG experience.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I mean, is there such thing as too many bench members if we've established that if it's the kind of game where you just accept you're not going to be using all of them?
I think some games, I think Suikoden is a series that does it well because they famously have 108 party members in each game that you can recruit, but there's also usually
exactly some, 108 in each game.
Yeah, the Stars of Destiny, I believe it's 108. I think has some significance in maybe some Eastern religion or something. I don't know.
This is all sounding a bit woo woo to me.
It's sounding a bit woo. But one nice thing is it's worth recruiting those party members because there's stuff outside of battle that's important. Like you're building up a fortress, like you're building up a compound, and you can recruit characters that are chefs and carpenters and
that's
and
cool.
Are things like that. Yeah, and I like that. Skies of Arcadia does a similar thing where it's not just you're recruiting characters not just for your party, but also for this pirate fortress you're building. And I kind of wish all RPGs had like a reason for these characters to exist outside of just the battles.
Yeah, I like games like some of the Assassin's Creed did, where you built up a party of like allies and you could send them on missions that would take a certain amount of time. Yeah. I always thought that would be a nice thing to have in something like Dragon Age Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, like, you get to a certain point in Dragon Age Inquisition, you got like all these party members you're not using. And you got all these side quests that there's not really much point in going back to do.
Yeah.
So what if we solve one problem with another and bring these two things together and send party members you're not using off to do side quests that you haven't got time for yourself? And then, I mean, whatever gain you could get from doing them was possibly not terribly great at that stage in the game, but you can still feel like as a heroic character in ways that you don't feel terribly heroic if you take someone's mission to save their like besotted spouse or their mother who's trapped in the Cave of Spiders and then just blow it off for the next 32 hours and never actually get around to it.
Because
how long is this poor bastard going to sit around in his hut going, well, that shining hero who's done so many great things for our community said he was going to go and rescue my wife from the Cave of Spiders. I don't want to tread on his toes, so I don't want to go check.
I'd rather have the hero send their B team out and just at least get the job done.
I don't want to bother him and seem a bit fussy.
Yeah, it also it could tie into sort of the topic we had last week about romances in games of wanting there to be some sort of like agency when you're not around. And so I like the idea of you send a group of three out to do this thing and they come back and like they have bonded and they have their equivalent of like in jokes because they went on this journey. And so like this world exists, like when you turn around, it's not like the world behind you disappears. Like you're not the center of the universe. Things are happening outside of you. And I like, I don't know. And I like that sort of like home base communal sort of camaraderie thing. Like Yakuza Like a Dragon had it when you'd go back to your karaoke whiskey bar. Your ships in either Knights of the Republic or Mass Effect have that, where the characters are kind of hanging out there. Just it feels like they exist even when you're off gallivanting and doing something.
Well, that gets us onto the sort of related topic of, as well as what's the perfect RPG party gameplay wise, what's the perfect RPG party story wise?
Yeah.
So you got to have. I think a lot of JRPGs follow a very similar formula. You have your stoic hero who usually doesn't emote much, usually doesn't talk much, who's just sort of effortlessly great at everything and everyone can see it.
Yeah.
So you are the hero. I'm going to follow in your footsteps from now on. Then you usually have a wacky friend. Wacky friend who's not quite as like, you know, flawless, but does the comic relief thing. And then you got two girls, exactly two, no more than two. You get Spunky Girl and Mysterious Girl. That's what you get.
That's Tifa and Aerith right there.
Also, you know, Chie and Yukiko.
Yeah.
Also, basically every RPG party. Yeah, I mean, honestly, test it out in your heads. It all works.
Yeah.
Yes. Wacky Friend, Spunky Girl, Mysterious Girl. Yeah. Everything after that. Are bonuses. So mascot character, that could go in there.
That's a big thing. Yeah, how do you feel about critters? Getting critters in those parties?
Well, we usually have one whether we want one or not, especially in Japanese RPGs.
Oh my god, Japanese. Yeah, but even like Bioware will give you the occasional critter. Like HK, the human killing robot in Knights of the Republic. I think he's a critter.
The gimmick critter character.
Types. Yeah.
Okay, what else do you think you've got? What's the standard archetypes? I think character who's slightly older than the other party members.
I was going to say that's like Barrett in Final Fantasy VII, Orin in Final Fantasy X.
See, I classify Barrett as the wacky friend in Final Fantasy VII.
I guess he does really early on. His like ass is literally on fire, I think, after one of the explosions, and they're running around trying to put his ass out.
Yeah.
I guess Cid would be in Final Fantasy VII. Eventually you get Cid, who's like an adult. Right. Who's got his driver's license and everything.
That fanboy guy in the comments quoting TV tropes all over the place here, saying the hero, the lancer, the smart guy, the strong guy, the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you could have the dude who's sort of clever and in the background.
Yeah, you could also get the sort of the twist where someone you thought was a villain turns out to be a party member, like Magus in Final Fantasy or in Chrono Trigger.
Right, right.
You know, you have a choice to either kill him or
the person you win round.
Yeah, yeah. Even like you get Akechi in Persona 5, who
and who isn't. The person you win around and who somehow isn't an ounce as powerful once they're in your party as they were the last time you had a boss fight against them.
10,000 HP in that boss fight. What's going on now? How is this happening? Yeah.
Well, if we're talking about like groups from a storytelling perspective, mm-hmm. what I've always found interesting is that there are writing formulae that are very well documented for writing groups of characters. And there's a specific one that's used for sitcoms a lot. And it's called Matriarch, Patriarch, Craftsman, and Clown.
Okay.
And if you start thinking about this applies to like a lot of sitcom plots. Like characters aren't necessarily assigned to one permanently. They're just assigned a specific role in each from like plot to plot. But you have the patriarch, who's the person who's like driving things. Person whose goals the party are following. Uh-huh. You have the matriarch, who's the sensible voice, the soft place to land for other characters who get into conflict.
Yeah.
You have the craftsman, who's the one who aspires for more.
Okay.
Who is working to find a better situation, and then you have the clown, who just does jokes. And if you look at like sitcom plots. These four roles are existent in pretty much all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, Broback says the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as well. That's pretty, pretty spot on.
If you like, Leonardo.
Yeah.
The other three.
No respect on the other three.
There you go. So that's
three shitty artists. Yeah.
That's an argument for keeping your party to four members.
Yeah, but then you kind of get... Then it brings it. So that's narrative wise. That makes sense.
Yeah, the narrative
in terms of a
story. Now that I think about it, virtually everything that's, sort of an ensemble thing sort of gravitates to four characters. Like it starts with like two or three, and they get a fourth, and they just kind of stick with that. I'm thinking of Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That sort of gravitates to a four person party.
Yeah. I just finished rewatching Trigun. It does for its second and beginning of third act, does a four-person party.
Does that gravitate to four?
Yeah, yeah. It starts with three and then adds a fourth. However, it is willing to allow a character to leave permanently.
Okay.
How do you feel about that in games?
Well, as long as they get immediately replaced with another person, just so we can get back up to four.
It's the rule of fours.
There you go.
That's true. If you count the dog, Cowboy Bebop is five.
Oh, the dog
doesn't
count.
Everyone says this is eye erasure. You can't say dogs don't count. You have one in your jacket, possibly.
They don't count as a character. Were there any eye-focused episodes where we dealt with their personal trauma and struggles?
I wish there was. I wish they made an entire season from eye's point of view. I
think there was not.
I do like, I think more games should be willing to either permanently, not necessarily even kill a party member, but just be, force you to grapple with the loss of a party member. In the same way Final Fantasy VII does, Persona 3 does that. Yeah. Grandia games do that. Dragon Quest games do that.
I hope you didn't spend too much time grinding up Aerith in Final Fantasy VII. Ha yeah. ha.
Oh no, my flower girl is dead.
LOL.
Also, Jesse in the chat says that Ayn is 100% a character. So oh, Jesse fine. Takes.
Well, if Jesse says so.
Grinderbin would say that, though.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking about the matriarch, patriarch, craftsman, and clown as it applies to Adventurers Nigh, actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Do you think it fits there?
I think we swap roles a fair bit.
Okay.
But yeah, I'll leave that discussion to the comments, I think.
Yeah, everyone can put their own touch on exactly yeah. how that works.
Who's the matriarch? Well, I think we all know who the matriarch is.
It's true.
It's Sigma. Anyway.
How do you feel about missable party members? That's another note.
Missable party members? Oh, the bonus yeah, party members.
Optional party members. Bonus party members. Final Fantasy VII famously has Yuffie and Vincent. Final Fantasy VI has folks like Mog and Gogo and Shadow.
Well, can't rely on like, narratively, can you?
No, that is one problem. Is you need to figure out like how to sort of slot them in and out, whether they are there or not there. But I do like the idea. I don't know. It almost like brings me back to like talking on the schoolyard when I was young with friends and finding out I've been playing a game and there's something there that I didn't know existed and kind of having my mind blown by it. Like if I would have played through a game and had no idea that. You know, Yuffie or Vincent were recruitable in Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah. I remember playing, I think it was the first Dragon Age game, and I've straight up murdered a potential party member on the scene where I met him. Because yeah. I didn't realize, because he was like, you know, ambushing the party, and I was like, I ain't chucking with that shit. And discovering after the fact that he was supposed to be a party member, sorry, didn't go along with your. Intended very dramatic character arc there, game.
BioWare games do that, pretty well. Mass Effect does that. Knights of the Old Republic do that. However, one thing which we've kind of talked about with Haru in the past is there's a certain point where it might be too late to introduce a party member, especially if you're trying to make them an integral part of the story.
No, that's true. Haru certainly feels like dead weight.
Yeah, and you just don't. You don't have that like opening 40 hours with them, and at that point it's like, all right, let's just get her through quick and then we can start going on the final act, and you're like, why don't, like,
this is why you should do the Earthbound thing and just stick to the starting four, because you know you're just you're just complicating things for yourself.
Yeah, but then at that point, does like, you know, do people play RPGs for kind of like the agency and for the ability to, this is my party and I have my thumbprint on it?
You know, now that we're laying this all out, I assumed we were going to talk about, you know, RPGs other than turn-based or Japanese-style RPGs. But thinking about it, I don't really like having a party in anything but turn-based combat.
Okay, so you don't like the idea of just, like, running out into an action game and having three people slashing about?
Like NPCs on the side, because I never really concentrate on what they're doing or pay any attention to what they're doing.
Yeah,
I just focus on what my dude's shooting at. And often this game, like in Mass Effect, they'll say, hey, press this button to get the party member on your left to do their special move on the enemy you're pointing at. I'm like, I'm pointing a gun at the enemy I'm pointing at. Why don't I just press the button that shoots the enemy I'm pointing at? That's my usual attitude.
Yeah.
I feel like in an action game, you're ostensibly there because you want to, you know, get in all the action. And if dudes are stealing your kills left, right, and center, it's no fun.
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts does that a lot, where Sora, you're just bashing the shit out of people, and then Donald and Goofy are off futzing about. I like it. I don't mind it in a thing like Final Fantasy XII, where so much of the preparation is in the lead up to the battle, like setting up your gambit system and sort of setting up an AI for those party members, because then when you get to the battle, it's almost like not pushing over the first domino. And pass or fail is dependent on how well you set things up beforehand. And so, like, when my AI party members are able to kill a bunch of dudes in Final Fantasy XII, I feel like that is because of me. That is because of the work and the thought I put in prior to going into that battle, as opposed to just Donald and Goofy.
I just feel like I can't be bothered with it. Like, I want, if it's got like an action focused combat system, I just want the game to level up my party members in accordance to whatever the optimal play is. I just want to have a button that says auto level these dudes.
Yeah.
Because when
yeah.
it comes down to fighting, most of the time it's just, especially in like the Dragon Age games, it's just, you could fret all day about optimizing the other party members' equipment and abilities. But at the end of the day, all I'm really doing is that everyone gets into a big punch up. Big dust cloud, sparks flying, fists appearing from out of the sides of the dust cloud, and then it's all over and everything's dead.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is...
I feel it easier to get my head around the tactics of a turn-based battle, I suppose.
Sure, yeah. No, I understand that. It also feels like a lot of the sort of the real-time combat games, real-time combat RPGs that have really taken off over the last decade... have been primarily a lone hero going out, whether it's the Souls games or you know, Witcher, that kind of thing. Like, well, there's other characters you meet and everything, but it's ultimately, you know, Geralt or your main character story.
Well, that's inevitable for a single-player game. Yeah. We're going to focus on lone hero-focused storytelling.
Yeah. But I mean, like, Final Fantasy, did you play 7 Remake?
I did.
That's sort of like towed the line between, I don't know. Did you feel like that changed your opinion at all?
Not really. Yeah. I mean, I think that feels like you've got multiple party members, but there's still only one player. And you're well advised to sort of switch from character to character in combat.
Yeah.
But that just feels like, you know, having to do everyone's homework for them.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, at least when I was playing it, I would just like switch. Oh, there's like a... annoying enemy that's flying about, so I'll switch to Barrett because he's got a gun.
Yeah, he's got a gun. So,
yeah, it's very nice.
Bit overpowered in a fantasy campaign, but you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, do you? How about when? What if the other party members are humans? I mean, you were talking about like Destiny earlier. You know, any sort of MMO. Like, do you think? Well, do you see that as like a?
Well, it's a multiplayer game, and I tend to avoid those.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I get social anxiety. I want to just have fun when I'm playing a game. I don't want to be worrying about if I'm performing well for the benefit of my fellows.
Yeah, I'm not a big multiplayer guy. I'm curious in chat, like, folks who've played a lot of, you know, any MMO or even Destiny, and if you play with, like, the same people, like, do you look at those people and those characters... the same way you look as like party members in an RPG? Like,
well, what role do you favor if you're playing like that sort of thing? Like, I used to play a lot of Team Fortress. Okay. And I usually favored support because it meant I didn't have to worry about, you know, making decisions and shit.
Sure.
Yeah. I just play medic, point the cursor at whoever seemed to have their, you know, seemed to know what the fuck they were doing.
Yeah.
And then rack up the points. That was my attitude.
It seems like you like support in a lot of games, though, because you were saying how much you liked sort of learning the buffs and debuffs and stuff like that in Persona.
Well,
is that like what you gravitate towards, you think, as a character?
Only if it's like a multiplayer setting and you have to pick a role.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, I want to be in the thick of it. I want to be making the decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to point at enemies and shoot them with the gun that I'm holding so I can feel like an exciting action man.
There you go. It's funny. It feels like Team Fortress 2 has, like, that almost feels like it has, like, perfect party dynamics as well. Like that.
Well,
that's
like very tightly designed, Team Fortress.
Yeah, yeah. Like, more so than almost any other multiplayer shooter like that.
The problem is a lot of multiplayer shooters try to say, you can also play as a single player game, and so every class has to be potentially playable in a single player setting.
Yeah.
Team Fortress 2 doesn't do that. It says this is multiplayer, you gotta have everyone fulfilling a certain role, and if you don't do that, you're fucked. You're a sniper, you want defenses against spies, tough shit, you gotta rely on your party members, asshole.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yeah, I mean, that also, I guess that also gets into the, you know, the thing you always make the claim of, that if you can't design a game that caters to both single player and multiplayer. Like, you kind of have to pick a lane, stick with it. The other one is going to be an afterthought.
Is there any game that's like multiplayer and single player? But if you play multiplayer, all the classes are balanced. But if you play single player, whoever you pick gets like buffed to act alone. There's got to be something that does that.
Yeah. I mean, is that, there's like enemy scaling, right? Like that kind of thing, where if like you play co-op in a game, then there's gonna be twice as many.
Yeah, that sort of thing. I'm talking about like. If the multiplayer has like different classes with different roles, but the single player can just do everything, I guess there's probably a lot of those.
Yeah, yeah. One of my last points I had written down. Would you prefer characters that fit into a mold and you kind of have to play them that way, or being given a party of characters and then you have free reign over something like, say, Final Fantasy V's job system?
See, in that sort of thing, I stress out, as I said, about whether or not I'm playing optimally. If you give me too many decisions, it's like when you like plonk me in something like Morrowind and say, hey, you can do whatever you like. And the immediate feeling is a sense of paralysis.
Yeah, yeah.
How do I know what's the best approach to take? What's the best weapon to equip?
Yeah.
I guess I like an RPG that's lighter on the challenge aspect, so you don't have to optimize well. That's why I get on with Persona 4 and 5 so well, I suppose. Persona 4 is easy as shit, gameplay wise.
Yeah. Yeah, once you wrap your head around sort of the like you said, buffs, debuffs, and then sort of the rock, paper, scissors of everything, then those games are kind of a breeze.
Yeah, you can like get through entire battles with the enemies never even getting a chance to have a go against you because you exploited their weaknesses well enough.
That being said, 1 out of 100 times, 1 out of 1,000 times probably, I'll be autoing through a battle and then be like, oh no, something bad happened. And it turned out they like the enemy somehow got a weakness attack on everyone and then just knocks my party out. And I'm like, that wasn't great.
Out of nowhere, it just turns around. Yeah. About that. Shall we go to Super Chats?
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
Why not? Again, I still don't have access to the Escapist YouTube channel again. So let me know if I miss anything. I think we're starting with Admiral Ron.
I believe so, yeah.
Admiral Ron gives $5 and says, based on Mother 3, the best formula for an RPG party is have an adorable doggy in the roster.
Oh, hell yeah. That is a great dog. Yeah, I'm a big fan of mascot characters. I like my Teddy. I like my Koromaru from I like Morgana.
Well, those are full-on party members with personalities and shit.
Red 13. I mean, Koromaru is pretty much just a dog, and like in Persona 3, he's not a talking dog. He's just a dog with a knife in his mouth, which is great. Give me more dogs with knives in their mouth.
Why does a dog need a knife in their mouth when they've already got teeth?
But to be honest, that's a great question, because they should have, like, in theory, he has several knives in his mouth. So, great question.
The knife's just going to fall out.
Yeah. A very good question. Now I'm worried.
There you go. Jacob Lester, member for 20 months, in Early Access, and says, Yarts would love an EP on how to write video games. Well, you could always watch Dev Diary, that entire series I ran for like 2 years on how to make video games.
Yeah.
Asshole. Anyway, what do you mean write video games? Like, I mean, I would say you design video games. You write the story, you design the video game.
Yeah. I think maybe they mean more of like, how do you write around the... How do you write fiction around player choice?
How do you write plots for video games? Well, that's like what my entire career is centered around, really. I'm a narrative gameplay critic.
There you go.
So that's a very complicated subject. I've written at length on its many facets many, many times over the years. Do your research. Chuki Unequal, member for 29 months in Early Access. 29 months, that's a lot. and says, presumably booze and music like any other party. Don't
you got us. You got us.
What a clever, hilarious misunderstanding. Based.
Joke. I also think all RPGs should have moments of the party just letting loose, loosening their tie a little bit, having a little fun.
What was that 16-bit JRPG that had the slightly cheeky translation where the characters have like the standard bathhouse scene and they just have like the characters just sort of the female characters compliment each other's tits out of nowhere?
I don't know that one. See, more games need that.
Yeah, there was a 16-bit RPG. I don't know what it was called. It was like a standard JRPG sort of thing. But the English translation sort of like kept like skating across the edge.
It's really, like they had like really this, horned it had, up a little bit.
Yeah, they had this underage like female character who was like in love with the main character, and they had this whole scene where she had a dream and then started faking an orgasm in the middle of the dream.
Not great.
And apparently like that wasn't really in the original Japanese. Like the translator was just being cheeky.
There's some horned up translator.
Yeah, and then there's the bathhouse scene and the same character looks at another character and goes, "You've got the biggest tits I've ever seen."
TSP thinks it was Tales of Phantasia.
It might have been that.
Yeah.
I really couldn't say if I recognized the title. All I saw was someone playing it over their shoulder.
You're like, probably not for me.
Wesley Thomas gives $2 Canadian. Sorry, were you saying something?
No, go ahead.
And says, the Waffle House has found its new host.
Wesley, does that mean you are the host at a Waffle House?
Like, are you accusing us of waffling, Wesley Thomas? No. It's entirely possible. I've been known to waffle.
I think Wesley Thomas got a job as a host at the Waffle House, the chain.
Well done for setting your ambitions high there, Wesley Thomas.
I think that sounds great. Waffle House is wonderful. Their food is excellent. Shout out to Waffle House.
Andrew Hickenbottom, member for 32 months in early access, says, played Spec Ops The Line for the first time. It's good in it.
Yes. It is good in it.
Certainly is good.
I agree. That is a great party member. You got you going insane. You got Lugo. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you got white dude and black dude.
Yeah, they're excellent. Yeah. And crazy
quite,
dude.
Quite a party. Three. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex Swarenborg gives $2 and says, your party out and about is nice in the overworld.
Oh, this is right. A small thing. If you're exploring an overworld, like when you're running around a map, I like seeing all my party lined up and running alongside you.
Well, like Earthbound. You know, I'm thinking of like in Persona 5, if you get to the end of the dungeon, the cutscene starts, and like all the people who aren't in your party just show up and are just there. And like, have they been with us this whole time? Why weren't they carrying their weight in the battles, if I may ask?
Why haven't you been helping?
Were they just like hanging out in the van?
Yeah. Yeah, that's like that's some of that little narrative dissonance right there.
So you like seeing the whole party trailing behind the lead dude as they run around?
I do. I don't like it just being one person running around and then all of a sudden they appear.
It's probably a much bigger pain in the ass from like a pathfinding perspective to have all four of them running around.
I guess, yeah, that's true. We'll just have them tether right behind you. Like Earthbound is just like a nice little train. It's like a centipede or a snake.
But then it raises the question of why you're doing like a little conga line through the country when you'd think, realistically, you'd all just be sort of walking along in the same direction in roughly the same location. Maybe someone would run on ahead and maybe someone would hang back a bit. I mean, we've all walked down the street with the party.
Tusken Raiders walk in a single file to hide their numbers. Yeah,
it just comes across a bit weird for everyone to just walk in single file everywhere they go.
Yeah.
Like in a big conga line.
Persona 3 does an interesting thing in the dungeon where when you get to a floor, you can tell your party members to go explore the floor and then... if you get into a combat encounter, it's just you. However, they're mapping out the floor for you. They will find items. They'll get into battles that you don't have to fight. And assuming their level's high enough, they'll win or they can be knocked out. And then they'll come back to you and be like, oh, look, I found these two treasures and I leveled up a bit and the map is opened up.
See, I wouldn't go for that because I want to explore the whole level myself to make sure I didn't miss any chests.
Wait until you get to floor 105 of Tartarus, and you're going to be singing a different tune in Persona 3. Just don't play Persona 3.
I don't think I will be playing Persona 3, no.
Never play Persona 3.
Andrew Higginbottom gives £5 and says, I was so besotted with Fran in my Final Fantasy XII playthrough. She was my main for the entire 90 hours, finished with her 30 levels higher than everyone in the party. Okay, here's one for you. Do you think you should be able to swap out the starting dude?
Do you think once you've got
like four party members, you should be able to drop the protagonist onto the bench and just use his four mates?
I do. And that works well in Final Fantasy XII because there's kind of like no central main character. That's just a, like the six people all sort of share importance.
I heard that. I heard the plot of Final Fantasy XII was written so that the main starting protagonist isn't really the main character in the story.
Yeah.
It's
so like whatever
approach.
Trio you have feels like it can be important. I like man, one of the things I hate in Chrono Cross, three party members in a battle, one of them always has to be your main, and so you can recruit like 40 some party members but only bring two of them to battle.
You only got two slots. Realistically, you've only got two slots. How are you going to keep all them leveled up?
In Chrono Trigger you can pull out Chrono doesn't have to be there. Then the game's just called Trigger, though, at that point.
Yeah. Isn't there, like, wasn't it in the first Dungeon Siege where, as well as her creating, like, a party of, like, eight dudes, you could even fire your starting dude and just finish the game with the seven dudes you found afterwards?
That would be incredible. I would love that. What main of a JRPG you've played, or any RPG you've played, what main character would you fire? Be like, you're out of here. We gotta...
100%. The little prince dude from Ni No Kuni 2.
I just want to be the cool monster.
Yeah, I want to play the cool president. I want to be the cool isekai president. I don't want to be the little prince shithead.
That game's opening is the isekai president thing is genuinely insane.
I know, right?
I do not know how that happened.
That's how you grab the audience.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, okay, I'll play Ni No Kuni 2. I'm not sure if I'll review it, but we'll see how it goes. And then you start off and you're the president in contemporary America and you get killed in a nuclear blast. And I'm like, well, I feel like I just turned over two pages at once.
Yeah.
Anyway, John Connor gives $5 Canadian, says, do you feel RPG party number rules apply to real life? 3 to 5 people seems like the best to hang out with before it gets too crowded. Well, it depends what you want, I suppose. If you want to snog someone, 3's a crowd, as they say.
I do that, but like, if you're planning like a dinner or like a movie, like that's not just a date. At a certain point, it becomes unwieldy.
Yeah, like, I suppose it would be the point where most reasonable people would forget about one of the people in the party.
Yeah.
Like, if one of the party just sort of drifted off and ghosted and went home, most of the rest of them probably wouldn't notice for some time. At the point where that would happen, that's probably too many.
If you are with a group and you go to a restaurant and they have to rearrange tables and furniture because of the number of people you've arrived with, you've arrived with too many people and you need to rethink this.
And you didn't book ahead, you asshole.
No. Monsters.
But in space, though... gives $5 and says, Yggdra Union for GBA / PSP was so terrible for optional party members with no foreshadowing you can get them. Legit can't be played without a guide.
The original Persona game is like that. You wander around the school and the first... I think the original Persona has 5 people in the party. Mm. And the first 4 people you talk to are just going to join your party. And you don't know that. And then if, like, an hour later, there is a character who is far and away the most powerful party member in the game, but because 99% of the people have already filled up their party by then, you just can't get them. Like, it is truly batshit.
It's like getting the proper ending in Cave Story.
Yeah, you know, how did anyone figure this out?
How would you know not to pick up the jetpack when the game says, here's a jetpack?
Yeah, exactly.
Loki. Gives 50 Swedish krona and says, what's your opinion on insert obscure video game initialism here? It's my favorite, so please don't make fun of me.
Oh, that was a goof, hon. People are always like, what's your opinion on DDR 3x, that kind of thing.
Do you think people? Do you think people who are outside the games industry get lost when they hear us talking? And we all know we're talking about in like that previous comment that said GBA stroke PSP. We all knew what that meant.
Yeah.
Then that would really sort of intimidate an elderly person if they heard that.
I imagine so, yeah. I mean, to be honest, I feel like at least every week someone drops an initialism or something in here that we're like, what is that? Like, we don't know what that is. Yeah. Or they'll just say AC and we're like, there's 10 different franchises
Games called AC.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it needs to be like, there's a certain like threshold, like GBA / SP, like those I feel like are ubiquitous enough to where they make sense, but certain things like you can't like you if it's a niche game, you can't do that. Or do it. I don't know. I'm not your fucking dad. Do whatever you want.
Oh, anyway.
Happy MLK Day.
Yeah, what am I talking about when I say GOW?
Literally, there was a year God of War and Gears of War both came out. And both of them had, it was GOW:A. I think it was God of War, I think Absolution and Ascension.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And it was like, what are we doing here? Get the fuck out of here.
Anyway, Raffle Wisoki gave us 5 PLNs and no comment. Well,
we appreciate suit it. Yourself. Those are Polish Złoty.
Oh, there you go.
Look at that.
HYorth87 gives 20 Danish kroner, I think, and says, your favorite Pratchett book? Mine is Night's Watch. I guess mine would still be Interesting Times. HYorth87. People have asked me that before.
Look at that. Well, book advice for you guys.
Andrew Hickenbottom comes back with £2 and says, towards the Help Marty Watch Avatar 2 fundraiser. Oh, I just noticed I guess we reached the target for the Half-Life 1. I guess they'll be playing Half-Life 1 in Gold Source, as I specified.
No, because it was if we go over 100%, then we have to only play the Black Mesa.
Well, what chance did that give me?
we're going to play. I think we're going to play the original. We're going to play the
original. Good. Don't worry. Squeaky wheels get the grease, people.
But they do. It wasn't as clear cut though. Some folks in chat were like, "You should play Black Mesa." And then I said,
I'm not saying you shouldn't say Black Mesa. I'm saying you should start with the original Half-Life and then, in some ways down the line, play Black Mesa.
Is it fine if we play them all with controller?
No.
There's no reaching across the aisle here. What's going on?
Mouse and keyboard or get to fuck. Anyway, Dick Earthquake. Member for 29 months in bonus content says, Yards, do you intentionally put the stank on the way you say turd, or is that natural? Sorry for the stupid question. I don't know what the hell you're asking me there, Dick Earthquake. Do I say turd in a specific way?
It feels like for a 4-letter word, you extend it a little bit. I really like
how turd.
Yeah. Like, I feel like it goes on a little bit longer than most other 4-letter words would. I like it.
There's a lot of words that you have to apply a sort of inherent comic timing to.
Yeah.
Like, when I say the word shit these days, I often feel like I need to extend it a bit. As in, this game's shit.
See? Okay, maybe that's a thing. Maybe just a 4-letter cuss. You like to extend the vowel in the middle.
Not usually with, like, fuck.
Fuck. Yeah, that doesn't sound as good.
Fuck.
Bearbomb says we should get a new goal to force Yossi to play Half-Life with a controller.
If you say fuck with extended U, it just sounds like you're disappointed by something. Fuck. It's still raining and I wanted to have a picnic.
Yeah.
Anyway. Gantorus, member for 7 months in early access, says, any love for build your own parties, e.g. FF Tactics?
Yeah, I guess I'm not crazy about them either. Like you were saying, it's sort of that choice paralysis or feeling like you're screwing up and not doing the right roles or anything.
Also, I don't really want to get stuck in like character creation for 20 minutes every time I get a new character.
How do you, does that also, like pertain to like when you level up, do you just want your stats to go up, like in Persona and Earthbound? Like occasionally in Persona, you'll have to choose, oh, you got an extra skill, but you have a full skill slot, so which one do you want to kick to the curb?
I guess,
would you rather have like a spirit board, like in the sphere grid or whatever?
I guess I prefer the stats to go up by themselves because, you know, I figure the game knows what's optimal to just make us generally stronger in battle. And basically any stat you improve is going to make you stronger in battle somehow.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't really go in for all this min-maxing shit.
Nah, neither do I.
I think I would be happy if every RPG had an auto level button. Maybe not like your action RPG stuff, because I want to like go over like the different skills you can unlock and figure out if that's something I'm actually going to fucking use and remember that I have in like the heat of battle.
Yeah.
Like all that shit we have to, rotate the stick from top to bottom and then press BABA to do a super swivel kick. I'm like, I'm never going to remember to do that. I'm just mashing buttons.
No one's got time for super swivel kicks. Yeah, there's a certain point where if you see like a skill tree and it's just, if it looks like a literal tree, my eyes gloss over and I'm like, I'm not going to deal with this.
Pirate Cap'n Jack gives $5, says, probably too late to ask, but thoughts on varied combat combos, i.e. Chrono Trigger. So it's not just deciding what individual skills a party member has, but deciding what combination moves you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Because different party members have exclusive combination moves.
Yeah, I always like that in Chrono Trigger, that like depending on who you have in battle, you know, Frog and Chrono can do a cross slash, which is super powerful, or you know, Marl and Luca can do a fire and ice attack at the same time. I think that's just a thing that adds a little bit of flavor to the party members. Like even the Persona games have introduced those, and those kind of like dual attacks. I think both 4 and 5,
From a narrative perspective, I think you want to get a sense that your party members are not just autonomous things acting in turn, but sort of things that are working together.
Yeah,
I think that brings it across pretty well. I always hated like in Octopath Traveler, I think it was called.
Okay.
Where whenever you're like pursuing a specific character's like storyline, that specific character is the only one that matters. Everyone else is just trailing off their ass like poo out of a fish's bum.
Yeah.
But every now and again, there'd be a little prompt so you could press it. And then when you press that, it would cut to like a black room where your current party member and one of your other party members had like a unique conversation about what had just happened in the plot. And I was like, why isn't this just happening automatically? To create a sort of organic sense that the party are growing together as people.
Yeah. The Tales games do that. These little like vignettes where if you're in a certain place or you've done a certain thing, you can hit a button to have like a little vignette between characters pop up. And I really like that. One thing I realized I was going to bring up earlier when we were talking about the perfect number of party members. One number we never touched on was 2. And the series that I always think of with 2 party members is the Paper Mario series. Because it generally has Mario and a pal, and those pals, especially in like the original Paper Mario and Thousand Year Door, usually have very different sort of even like battle mechanics or traversal mechanics or puzzle solving mechanics. Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Well, in that case, Mario always had the same abilities, and the party member was just, you know, whoever's optimal for the current situation.
Yeah,
they all had like different things that could apply in different situations.
So
you had the one like fullback dude who always does the same shit, the meat and potatoes dude who just does the standard damage, and then you have, you know, the bespoke one.
Someone who's good at attacking armored enemies or good at attacking flying enemies. Or remember there was that busty ghost?
Was that the one who was transsexual?
I don't know. No, that was Birdo, right? Unless there were several characters.
I think in the original Japanese, the ghost character in Thousand Year Door was transsexual.
You know what? Good for them.
Yeah.
Good for the busty ghost, whose name I can't remember.
That, although I think obviously in the American release, all reference to that was removed. Vivian, that was her name.
Oh, that fanboy says that was a cloud? That wasn't a ghost? Well, what is a cloud if not a ghost of the sky? Think about that.
Oh, yeah. I forgot there was another character who was a busty cloud in the Thousand Year Door. There was also a ghost who named Vivian, who was born male and was a lady in the course of the game.
You know what? I'm great for you. Okay, I was not thinking of Vivian. I was thinking of the Busty Cloud.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure they were horned up
for all these characters.
They were cis female, the Busty Cloud, I think.
I believe also, didn't that game also, Miss Meows, I think, was a character that you could skip. I think that game also had
Yeah, she was a skippable character. There was one skippable character in Thousand Year Door. Yeah, I know. I love the Thousand Year Door. Why are we still talking?
On Switch. What are we doing, Nintendo?
Yeah, never been ported. What the fuck's with that? Also, Super Paper Mario, I wouldn't say no to either.
Be great. Put them all there. The original Paper Mario's on there. Put the rest of them on there.
Hot Creamy Fard, member for 8 months in Early Access, says every party needs a Thaddeus Godbother of the Third, which is a reference to my first novel. You big old brown noser, you. Hunter Roach gives $10 and says, that's one thing I always appreciated about Mass Effect 2's final mission. You have that big team and everyone's doing something rather than sitting on the bench while Shepard did everything. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's the big, the big suicide mission thing, right?
Yeah, that's
like
the one where characters die if you didn't love them enough. Which feels a bit emotionally manipulative, but there you go.
You didn't give them enough kindness tokens for them to...
You couldn't love a motherless child. You swine.
Can Shepard die on that mission? But I guess it wouldn't be a third game, right?
I guess not.
No.
I'm pretty sure he can't. He or she can't.
Yeah.
Everyone else can, though. Every other party member can die on that mission if you didn't love them enough.
That's pretty gnarly. Andrew Hickenbottom said, I was so happy with who died in my ending. My least favorites were sent to their death. Yeah,
that's a win-win scenario. I guess that means it works.
Yeah.
If you didn't love them enough, then we'll just kill them. And I guess we'll all be fine with that.
The system works.
Leonard Soikerboik gives €5 and says, if you could marry one video game character, who would it be? Oh, this is a slightly sophomoric question, Leonard Soikerboik. I mean, we don't really know any video game character in totality. We wouldn't know that they'd be a good spouse.
Looking at all my...
I guess I'd marry Nico Bellic from GTA 4.
Cousin! Isn't he a war criminal?
Yeah, but, you know, he seems like a well-rounded kind of guy.
Yeah, I guess. What about Alex Vance? She seems nice. Didn't she build you that dog? That was cool.
She has, fantasy waifu vibes. Manic Pixie Dream Girl vibes.
This 500 Days of Alex Vance.
Who's really inexplicably attracted to nerdy mutes.
Yeah.
Wow, there's something weirdly magnetic about this person's complete absence of social skills.
Truly an audience cipher there.
Who would you marry?
I'm literally looking at my list of games to see. I don't want to marry any one of these games.
Well, I'm already married, so you know, I would marry the custom protagonist my wife made. There you go.
Yeah. That's nice.
SPSGuru2000 gives €10 and says, I'd like a game where the party consists of every character you've recruited so you can have your own little army. You'd only control 4 of them and the rest act on their own, but they're all there. Okay. Yeah. Well, so they'd all be there for every battle?
You would need it to be like large-scale battles, though, right? Yeah. Like, it would almost need to be like a Fire Emblem-esque thing. You can't be like rolling through the tight corridors of a dungeon against 2 or 3 enemies and have like your party of 15.
Like that fight scene from the second Matrix movie.
Yeah, exactly. The Burly Brawl. Yeah, exactly.
Jason Tudor gave us $5. Says, you might have addressed this, but what about TTRPG parties? Would you stick with the trad cleric fighter wizard rogue or go wild? I remember a comment recently pointing out that there's no member of Adventurers Nigh who's like the dedicated healer.
Yeah.
So have in that case we all just wanted to play the character we wanted to be. It was almost 3 of us went Artificer before I realized we already had 2 Artificers, so I went with Rogue Bard.
Have you noticed a lack of healing in your party? Like, have you gotten into a lot of situations?
Everyone's sort of got like a token healing ability on the side.
Sure, yeah.
Like, so we could all pass for healing if it's necessary.
And, I mean, Jack is an incredible DM, and a good DM sort of figures, like...
Yeah, I mean, we get into combat so infrequently because we keep weaseling our way out of it with our cunning tactics.
Oh, that's true. Tyrell said, well, SideQuest had a healer, and you saw how that turned out. Listen, I made it out of there just fine. Let me tell you guys. So don't blame the healer for anything that happened there.
I'm getting good at sort of manipulating Jack into letting me pull complete bullshit. That means we get out of combat.
Are you going to be able to do it in person for season 3, though? Will he be able to see through your lies?
It's possible. See, what you have to do is you don't, like, tell him the plan straight off the bat. You just say, Jack, would it be possible to still access the root network at this point? And he goes, well, I suppose there's no reason why you wouldn't be able to. And then just, like, fucking turn half the bad guys to the side of good.
Jack, don't listen to this, or else you're gonna be wise to Yahtzee's schemes.
SGS Guru 2000 gives 10 euros. Oh, we've done that one. Yeah, we did that one.
Yeah, I think we're on Robert.
Moving on. Robert Breedlove. Good name there.
Incredible name.
I mean, it's got breed and love right there. That's two things you need.
That's like Dr. Feelgood.
Gives $5. Says, been playing Pillars of Eternity 2. I love how Obsidian has contextual dialogue moments that encourage the player to vary up their party lineup. Yeah, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, contextual dialogue moments. Yeah, or like a reason to.
Mm.
I don't know what that would be. Like, almost like, the equivalent of the Mass Effect 2 thing of, like, eventually, if you have any characters, because there's other, I think Final Fantasy 7 does it, where towards the end, there's a dungeon where you have to almost split your team up into two groups.
Mm.
And like two separate parties, and you're bouncing back between the two of them. And if you know you didn't prepare a secondary set of characters, you're kind of SOL.
Yeah, it's fun to find the unique dialogues for that. I think there's another bit in Final Fantasy VII where you have to split the two groups. I think it's right after you leave Midgard. Mm-hmm. And if you choose Cloud and the two girls as one party, I think Barrett says something like, "Yeah, I kind of figured it'd turn out like that."
But then when you get to the Gold Saucer, you can go on a cool date, and maybe you could date Barrett and go on a nice Ferris ride.
Like stealth dating sim mechanics.
Yes.
How do you feel about, do you like your dating sim mechanics to be fully upfront, or do you like a game to like assign you a spouse based on your secret decisions at the end?
I feel like my head says that I want them to be analyzing me, and I don't want to realize I'm being analyzed.
Yeah, I want to be
but
surprised.
I think my heart says I want to be full and like, because what if I end up getting paired with someone I don't like?
Like when Silent Hill Shattered Memories, I kind of liked that it was analyzing our behavior, but because they were so upfront about how they were analyzing the things you did, it was sort of constantly on your mind.
Yeah, we talked about that with the Telltale thing of Blank will remember this. How that started off kind of cheeky, but then became kind of annoying because you were almost gaming it to try to play that way. I also don't like when a game's like, this is a very important decision. You better pay attention. I'm like, all your decisions should be important. Unless it's some bullshit, like, don't do that Persona thing where, like, if I'm not paying attention and I choose the wrong thing, I don't get the real ending of the game. Get that shit out of here.
I guess you just make a choices matter game where your choices never matter. Anything.
Oh, do you mean all choices matter games?
Yes. Every game billed as a choices matter game has choices that don't matter for shit. It is becoming a running gag. No prizes for guessing the game I'm currently writing a review of. Jane Kinsu gives $4.99 and says, will you ever ZP Wasteland 3? It's a combo of XCOM combat with Fallout New Vegas RPG mechanics. Highly recommend. I think I started it. I don't think you saw it through. I think I ended up with one of those choice paralysis situations. And I sort of just got bored and fell off.
Yeah, Nick was streaming it for a while last year on the Editor's Hour. It absolutely seemed exactly like the thing you just described of XCOM across Fallout New Vegas. It's kind of old, though, at this point, right? Like, and if you're only digging into one older game every year, it's got to be a game of shame. It's got to be your furry Hitlers, your Danganronpas. I don't know why I combined the two of those. Like I've played one of them and enjoyed it. I'll let you guess which one that is.
Okay, then. Robert Breedlove comes back with $2 and says, my mother's maiden name is Kilgore. Seriously. Are you a character in something, Robert Breedlove?
That's kind of incredible, if we're being honest.
Are you a character in a Matt Berry sitcom? I don't know.
Garth Marenghi, Robert Breedlove, and Helen Kilgore.
I was thinking of Toast of London.
Oh, there you go.
Every character's just got a weird random word as their surname, like Ray Purchase.
Ray Purchase. That's really good. I like that.
I guess that's it. That's all the super chats. Thanks
we
for
did it.
All those super chats. Maybe someday soon we'll come up with another goal like they could go towards.
I think Nick is on the cusp of giving us a new goal.
Do we have one in mind?
I don't want to say this. Yeah, I think he said this, that they were thinking of doing Friday stream in the Friday streaming slot. Having like certain members of the Adventurous Night Crew play like an RPG together.
Oh, well, I probably wouldn't have time for that.
No, but I think they were the less busy people.
Okay.
The fewer busy people. Yeah.
Right. So everyone besides me and Jack.
I believe Jack is going to be there.
Oh.
So it's just going to be everyone but you. You weren't invited to the Adventurous Night Party.
Well, his kids are older than mine, so.
This is true.
He's got more free time because they go to school at some point.
But there's going to be plenty of time to be hanging out with you and Jack because episode 2 of our incredible Sea of Thieves series.
Oh, that's right. And, yeah. Kind of got bogged down with some shitty Ghost Train Ride DLC in the first episode. But next time we've got plenty of time for treasure hunting and shit.
We gotta get enough money. We got to get an animal for the ship. Also, if we buy a nice ship and it sinks, do we just lose that ship? How does that game work?
I don't know. I don't think the game works without a ship, so I think they just give you another one.
Okay.
There's no upgrading mechanics. Can't upgrade characters, can't upgrade ships.
It's all cosmetic, right? Like, everything is cosmetic.
Yeah, there's cosmetics, so it doesn't really matter if you lose your ship.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Anyway, what else we got coming up this week?
What do we got today? Later tonight, Jesse and Casey will be back with Hidden Gems. Something sounded weeby, I think.
Something weeby?
Weeby. Tomorrow we'll have the recap at noon. Darren, Nick, and I will be talking about the first episode of The Last of Us on HBO. Full spoilers. I believe yesterday or the day before, we passed the Patreon goal to where Darren Mooney is going to cover a couple games, including Immortality and The Last of Us Part 1, which is going to be very exciting, because Darren even bought a PlayStation 5. He hasn't had a video game system since the PS2, I believe. Now he's got a PS5.
Hmm. How will he get past the advanced gameplay of the modern era Ghost Train Ride? Anyway, yes, and Zero Punctuation on Wednesday, of course. This week, it's going to be a roundup of games from 2022 I didn't review.
Oh, nice.
Including a couple of very hotly requested titles. For crikey, you could not shut up about some of these games. Go on, have a guess.
I'm excited for this. How many do you usually throw in there? A bunch?
I think I'm doing a paragraph on 6 different games.
Okay. And then how do you choose which games you're going to play on PostCP?
I'm probably just going to do the first one, to be honest.
Okay.
It's the one that the most people requested.
Mm. I have a feeling a couple of people have already mentioned it in the chat. And I think it's Orc Massage. Yes.
Yes. It's all, you figured it out. It's Orc Massage and Furry Hitler at the same time.
Oh, no.
Anyway. And also the usual new episode of Extra Punctuation dropping for members on Thursday. And the finale of Adventure Is Nigh Season 2 dropping on Saturday for members and Patreon subscribers.
Holy moly.
Everyone's going to be keen to see that after the explosive previous episode with its hot character moments that reduced several commenters to literal tears.
Oh my God, you babies.
I know, right?
Babies. I'm kidding. It's great.
Who would have thought me just pulling a load of bullshit improv shit out of my ass during this character moment would be such an emotional moment for the show?
Incredible. What a time to be alive. We also have one last member chat.
Oh, so we do. Luke Jimenez a member for 8 months in early access, says, could you guys give us an Agincourt salute? I don't know what that is. Like I'll do a Rimmer salute.
Agincourt, like from, what was that? Henry the one of them? Henry the fourth? Henry the fifth? Henry the third?
Is that probably the one where it's ostensibly the reason why, like, the two fingers is a rude gesture in England? Because the story goes that the French would cut off the fingers that archers used to pull back arrows with. And so when the French were defeated, all the English archers just went, hey, look, we've still got assholes.
I like that. That's nice.
Yeah. It's funny that. I grew up with that being a rude gesture. And it just isn't outside the UK. Yeah, I know it's a myth, Lampy. I assumed it was apocryphal. It certainly sounded apocryphal to me.
I like it.
Right, it sounded a bit, you know, fornication under consent of the king in my book. Another.
No, that's real, though. That's real.
No, that is another complete.
That's absolutely real. Nope.
That is another complete myth. What's sometimes referred to as a backronym.
Is that like a made-up acronym?
Yeah. Like an acronym made up after the fact. It is absolutely not the case that it is the origin of the word.
I love backronym. Incredible.
Well, that'll be it from us then. Thanks for all the super chats. I'll see you all on Wednesday for the post-EP stream. Tune in later today for the shit or hitherto mentioned.
Yeah, Hidden Gems, 6 p.m. Be there, be square. You can be square, that's fine.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Here's Toffee. He's suddenly getting very excited because he's figured out he's about to go for his walk.
Oh, love you, Toffee.
Lick my nose. Eat all my bogeys. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.